Welcome to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram with Dr. David Daniels, the program that will develop your own self-awareness and strengthen relations with all of those around you. Now, enlightening you with the Enneagram, here's Dr. David Daniels.
So, welcome back to Voice America and the Bringing the Enneagram Life show. I'm David Daniels, your host for the show, and this is the third in our series. The first show is a general introduction to the Enneagram, and I would refer new listeners to the show, which is archived, to get a full description of the Enneagram system and how it works. But in a brief, the Enneagram is a system of nine personality styles that shows how we think, feel, and act in the world in nine distinctive patterns. And its importance is that as a personality styles, it shows us what's driving us, what's motivating us, what our basic coping strategy is. And it shows us how we organize attention in the world, which is extremely important. We all have a different set of perceptual filters depending upon our type, and so we don't see the world from all the different points of view. And I would just remind everyone that Ennea means nine in Greek. Enneagram means nine personality styles in a figure, a nine-sided figure. So that's the background I wanted to give you. We're moving on today to type 5, the observer on the Enneagram, one of the mental types. There's the three centers of intelligence, the mental center of intelligence, the heart center of intelligence, also very important, the emotions that we have in our communications, and what's called the body center of intelligence, the kinesthetics, what tells us about our position in the world and our place in the world and our power and control and things of that nature, our vital instincts. So we're moving on today to, as I said, to the observer on the Enneagram system. So I want to welcome our panelists for today, Nancy and John and Jay, and thank you for being present for this. And I'm just going to start out with the basic structure of type 5. We sometimes call this the basic proposition that contains the key themes of the type and help us get a deep understanding of how the type structure operates. For the 5, the original state of directly knowing, sort of transparently knowing that a great universal energy provides for us. You know, we see this nascently in little infants before the cerebral mantle develops, before thoughts and feelings. They just know when they're hungry, when they're tired, when they're cold, when they're warm, and when they just need contact, a kind of direct knowing. But this child experiences the world comes in and either takes too much away, intrudes and takes too much, or doesn't give enough, or both, some of both, and comes to the conclusion that there may be insufficient resources, insufficient supplies. And so it believes that then you have to develop, in order to gain satisfactory survival, you have to develop self-sufficiency and obtain knowledge and guard your boundary, have privacy, and retreat to think about things. And the energy underneath this, the kind of driving energy, we call it avarice. It's a special meaning. It means this holding on to just those things you can't live without. Space, some space for yourself, some private time for yourself. Time to think things over, and for any things you just feel you just can't live without. And attention naturally gets organized and goes to sort of detaching to observe and looking out for too much intrusiveness in the world. And the thing that the fives want to avoid, and the worst thing that can happen is that somehow somebody'd intrude or the world would claim and demand so much that you'd end up in a state of utter depletion and wouldn't be able to function. That's the avoidance, at least unconsciously. And of course, the cost in all of this is you sort of lose that sense of being in contact and engaged in the world and receiving all the things and support that you can actually receive from the world and have substituted this more detached state for it. So I wonder what this brings up for you about the basic themes. If we could start with you, Jay.
Well, I find that I am very protective of my time. And it's sort of a double-edged sword because I might be so protective of my time that I have then too much time and then I go to boredom, which I don't do very well either because I like to be engaged and interested in something. And so it can go too far. But I find that that's one of the primary area for me in which I'm protective.
So what's driving that? What makes you be protective of time?
Well, I suppose that I've always thought of it as in terms of I don't want to make a commitment to that because by the time it comes up, I may not want to do that. Actually, I might want to do something else. It's kind of a freedom issue for me.
Right.
There might be more of an element of depletion that I haven't really realized before or been willing to admit.
Right, that if you make too many commitments, you get too involved, too many claims will be made upon you.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have time for, you know, myself. I wouldn't have time to read, which is extremely important to me. So, you know, it's not until you really state the basic proposition the way that you do that I've really kind of gotten to that, the depletion aspect of it.
Right, because you don't, that's what you're guarding against.
Sure.
You won't ever get there. Right, absolutely. And John, how about you? What in the terms of these basic themes?
Well, I also feel that time is the ingredient that is most important to me to be protective of, to maintain the... One of the things Jay said that triggered a spontaneous response from me is... The ability to rejuvenate myself, the ability to be who I am and be centered when I am with other people is so imperative for myself that I begin to get on edge if I'm finding that I'm too busy to regain my own composure, regain my own sense of self, sense of who I am and how I proceed in the world.
So the kind of feeling that if you're to engage with people that you might end up depleted rather than supported and nurtured?
Well, yes, I'm certain your language underlies a different way of me stating it, that for me, the feelings that I have are that I feel I am a valuable resource. I enjoy being around myself. I enjoy being valuable to myself and to others. And in order to be valuable, I need to continually be replenishing myself. And so rather than seeing it as a sense of depletion, my own terminology that comes up for me is it is a lack of replenishment. That
right.
I don't see it as a taking away as much as a continual ongoing stream of keeping vital my way of having a river of life. And
right. In order to keep vital, you need time to replenish yourself and can be very giving. I think this is one of the things about the type 5 observer that is a great misunderstanding, that you can be very giving, engaged people, but you need time to retract, you need time to come back, you need time to replenish, as you put it, to rejuvenate yourself.
Right, I would see it as a more proactive way of stating it for me that is more my own reality is I want to stay on. I want to stay centered. I want to be able to be the person that I am and be able to contribute what it is that I contribute. And I've learned over time that there are very necessary things that I need to do in order to stay that way. So I don't think about becoming depleted.
Right.
I strictly think about always staying replenished, always
right.
full.
Right.
So
no.
that the depletion is not something that I live with even really a thought of, other than, yes, it's the boogeyman, but I don't think about the boogeyman
right.
because
I
I'm
get
constantly
you.
Staying ahead of the boogeyman. It never gets me.
Right. Thank you. That's great. Thanks very much. And Nancy, on this basic themes?
Well, the issue is, again, pretty big for myself, not only for the replenishment, but I think for myself, actually in the moment for myself to actually take in what's going on and to process it and understand what's going on and to be able to react. I tend to react rather slowly quite often. So quite often I need that time, and for some people it just drives them up a wall.
Mm-hmm. You need time to do what? To consider it? To think through? To what?
To think through, to actually see what's going on. Sometimes it's taking time to figure out what I need to do or to actually understand what's going on or being presented.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what does that protect you from? How does that serve you? You know, some people just get the idea and they go right into action.
Right. And I suppose maybe that concept of missing, not having enough supply, not having enough knowledge, not having enough skills instinctively, possibly. Mm-hmm. I have this need to be mentally aware of mm-hmm. what I'm doing before
right.
I do it.
Right. So you want to think it over. You want to be sure that you have a context from which to operate.
Right.
Right. Right. So is this true for all of you, that this thinking over and gaining knowledge and understanding is a very vital part of your personality? Jay or John?
Well, for me, it really depends. I just can't give you a blanket answer on that one, because some things, yes, definitely. You know, you've got a situation, what you go for. If it's a big thing, yeah, first thing you go for is more information. We need information here. But there are times when I will react very quickly to something and make a decision rather quickly. There are times in my life, oddly enough, where when, in terms of, say, investing in something that was a real sizable chunk of money, I did a very unfively thing and did it without enough information. I would say the majority of the time, if let's say you're going to go buy a washer dryer, well, what do? You go to Consumer Reports and you check that out, and you gather information. You don't just go willy-nilly and make a decision, because it could be the wrong decision, and you've wasted money, and all kinds of things could mm-hmm. be wrong about that.
Mm-hmm. John, the business of gathering information and knowledge.
Well, what came up in listening to that is I'm not a fly fisher person, but I've been around good fly fishing people, and they have this kit of flies there, and they seem to know how to, out of hundreds of flies, which one's going to have a chance of bringing the fish to the surface. And in my life, how that fits in for me in listening to Jay and what she's describing is that's the way my day goes. That's the way I work on what I work on, is I've got this fly fisher's box that I'm continually going into. So even though I'm making this little simple decision, whatever it may be, in light of the hard decisions and the simple ones, it's always in context of a rather complicated ability to look through my box and pick the right fly to make the decision at the moment. So even though some decisions seem like they're rather rapid and instantaneous, they're a result of many years of training and expertise to learn how to pick the right, what might be the right solution to the particular matter that's being right. handed to me at the time.
Thoughtful analysis is omnipresent, so to speak.
Right. It's just breathing.
Right.
that without that thoughtful presence and that preparation, it wasn't just that particular moment in time. It's years of preparation to actually at that moment be able to do something rather skillfully.
It's a great example. Thank you. Well, I want to move on and ask you about how are relationships for fives for you as an observer? And what do you bring to relationships, particularly vital relationships, that's positive or... The audience might notice that there's often a pause because the type thinks this is a type that's thoughtful and thinks things over and needs a little time.
Well, I think that sort of the ability to be objective, to, you know, really kind of think before reacting, to understand. I mean, to me, trying to understand is huge. And so I want to know why. And if I can just know why, I'm going to be very understanding, and I'm going to accept a lot from a person, but you're going to have to explain yourself. I drive my poor nine husband crazy with this, because I got to get at why. If you just tell me why, you know, it's okay. And I think that's a really, you know, I answered this question once, what do you bring to relationship? Why is it good to be in relationship with a five? And I said, because we're very reasonable people. It just came out. And then afterwards I went, how fively was that? And why couldn't I have said passionate or loving or caring or fun? I said reasonable. And I felt kind of bad about that afterwards, because that's kind of boring. But then I thought about it and I thought, no, I would want to be in relationship with a reasonable person. Because if they're reasonable, they're not just going to go fly off the handle and cause all kinds of problems with that. I think that's a wonderful trait.
Right. And you mentioned a nine husband. We haven't come to nine yet in the series, but the nine is the mediator and often doesn't express a lot of or even hold their own opinions very well and express a lot, so that you don't get a lot of information necessarily. So blessings in relationships, or what blessings you bring to the game, so to speak, John?
For me, relationships are hard and easy, and that's been the reality of actually getting more composure with relationships. There was a time in life, in my own context of being a five, that I just felt like that should be easy, that relation stuff like should be easy, because it doesn't seem like it's all that complex. And as I matured through that misunderstanding,
right,
got hit by
the 2x4.
Yeah, relationships are hard. And as I
have a little saying that goes, relationship is the negotiation that never ends.
Yeah, yes, that seems fitting. As I have accepted the boundaries of relationships being hard and easy, the more centered approach for me has been that relationships work well for me in life so long as I'm legitimately a five. It's when I've been trying to be other people that seem to get along in life better than me often, that I have run into my own difficulty of finding myself again and realizing that I'm just fine as a five, but what is a five? What do I bring to the table? And to answer more succinctly, what I feel I bring to the table is not only reasonableness, as Jay has said, but straightforward response. It may take a little while to get to that response, but there's no messing around with me. Mm-hmm. That I will get down to the real issue, whatever it is. There's no chameleon or trying to cover something up. Mm-hmm. I want to know what's really happened so we can build on a pure foundation, even mm-hmm. if it causes all kinds of real problems. I can handle real problems. I don't like the phony stuff.
Right. Thanks. And Nancy, what are some of the positives?
I'd say probably the one that stands out in my mind the most is probably patience. I've had here and there people say, well, gosh, you've got like this golden patience. And maybe it's because I find that that's very helpful for myself. I think it's a challenge being a five. I think sometimes the quietness throws people off and they misread that as not being able to think, which has been frustrating at times in the workforce. I would say the biggest challenge in relationships is due to the time factor and needing time for myself, and also being a person that needs to provide for myself financially and work, that doesn't leave a lot of time for meeting people to create relationships. So that's a big challenge.
So the challenge is being making yourself available.
Yes.
Coming out to engage. That's. What about when an important relationship that you're in? What's challenging to the other person?
It really depends on the personality of the other person, I think. A challenge that I've had in a past relationship was my desire or my need to think things through and be responsible and spend money very wisely, and the other person was very much more spontaneous and didn't work too well.
Mm-hmm. It caused a lot of conflict.
A lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. About the challenges, Jay or John, in relationships, what's challenging about being with a five?
I think that the tendency to withdraw is probably the biggest challenge for somebody in relationship with a five. I think I do it sometimes without even realizing I'm doing it. You know, I'll kind of have to remind myself. You know, I'm more aware of it now than I used to be, but sometimes it can be if I feel, you know, if I felt hurt, I would withdraw. Now it's more just kind of an unconscious, I can feel myself starting to do it. Maybe I'm mulling something over, or I'm just in a space in myself, and I start to realize, I'm not paying enough attention to this person, and I need to, you know, show some more affection. You know what I think a lot of it is fives are really self-sufficient. At least I feel that I am, and I don't need a lot. And I've really worked on that. I don't want to be needy. I'm very self-sufficient. I'm self-contained. And so you kind of expect that other people are too. And it'll come as kind of a bit of a surprise that sometimes, somebody I might need a little something here, and let's give that to them. I mean, I'm actually working on myself to be more, you know, complimentary to people when I'm thinking something, to actually say it to them, to just give more of myself that way. It's not that I've been intentionally holding it back. I just didn't realize I wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm. There's a great live and let live kind of philosophy in most fives.
Yes.
And not be intrusive. But what's the function of the withdrawal? What does it serve? How does it serve you?
Well, I suppose it's a self-nurturing kind of thing. I just am taking care of myself somehow. You know, I'm really just having to start to think, to examine that, because, as I said, it's almost such an unconscious thing. You don't know that you're doing it. So, obviously, you know, I mean, it's seen that it serves a nurturing function.
A nurturing function, or, as John might say, a time to replenish or to be sure you have what you need.
Mm-hmm. I guess. You know, it's like I said, it's kind of hard for me to admit that, because it's kind of like, hey, I have what I need, and I don't, you know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. what you said. It's.
Well, you know, you bring up something really important, is that a lot of all of our behaviors, regardless of type, as a just old now maladaptive behaviors or non-adaptive or not very functional, that one time in our lives, you know, really served us in some way, and they're just there. They're like habits and don't serve us so well. It's true for all of us.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting that if I sometimes get myself past a certain point, like I've told you, I don't like to be busy, but sometimes if I get myself to a point of being quite busy, I can actually enjoy it. And so it kind of does speak to, hey, maybe you don't really have to be so protective of this time, but I'll slip back into it.
Right. Right. Thank you. And John, what might be challenging in relationship with a five, with an observer?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is I'm funny but not funny. And by that I mean my wife and I joke that I'll say a joke and I get to say but we know I'm not good at jokes, because I don't joke around that much. It's not part of my nature. And on the other hand, it's like if a joke finally comes out of me, it's like really funny. Point being that I've got friends that I like better than me for entertainment, I enjoy the way they talk, the way they handle themselves, I'm attracted to a lot of different types of personalities to go alongside a person like myself, who I see as an anvil of sorts, the frame around the painting. I bring balance to the beauty of the art, and that's well and good, but there's another part of me that's this high-flying artist that just loves to get out there, has enormous passion, wants to do all these great things, and have found in relationship with myself even that I don't like often being grounded by myself. I don't like being brought to the realities of, you know, this is a neat thing you're getting into here, but give some contemplation to how much time is it going to take from you, for one thing. How are you going to be able to balance this into the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and put it in a context with you, it's relationship with myself that I found most challenged towards getting appreciation for the fact that I'm a tremendous balancing source, even though I find myself that's where I have my biggest difficulties, where I get out of balance. So it's it's hard in a way to say that that's my asset, however it is.
It's like having a correct kind of energy balance within yourself so that you can be engaged with others.
Right, and to gain that, though, it's been the other side of it is the mirroring effect of all the places in my life where I could see that that didn't work so well, and this didn't work so well, and that didn't work so well in relationship with someone else. And instead of trying to change myself so that I could relate better to them, I began studying what is it that's unique about myself in terms of being able to relate better as to who I am with the other persons,
right.
and help not just explain myself better, but actually just
be yourself,
more of the person that I am.
Right, right. Thank you. I wanted to ask you each, you know, for all of us, there are things that will cause us personal reactivity, will, you know, set us off or push our buttons. What sort of things will do that to you? And Nancy?
One that I've noticed, particularly in the last couple of years, is when I've been given instructions to do something and I fit it into my priorities, and if the priorities seem very extensive at that time, and then I later find out that, oh, we're not doing that and you didn't need to do that, or if it even causes more problems, that will set me skyrocketing.
Mm-hmm. What about that skyrockets you?
What about it?
Yeah.
Well, that's something that's taking up time, and the time is very valuable, especially when there doesn't seem to be enough time to do everything
that's being required. Something taking up time and energy. There's other things that are required, and this is right. Like an intrusion and one more claim, and it's not even a necessary one.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And that'll get you going.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jay or John?
Well, I think somebody who's being too emotional can be difficult for me. I had a sister when I was growing up that was just so small. And kind of reacted against her in a lot of ways. I think that definitely the wait time thing is big. Having to go somewhere and small talk. I mean, it's probably in a Fives dictionary. If you looked up hell, there'd be a picture of a cocktail party. It's horrible.
What's horrible about the cocktail party? Sometimes I think it's a universal, but are all this emotion, the sister that's all emotion coming at you, how does that set you off?
I want to qualify this because we're with a group of people for the week here that, you know, I don't know, and so I don't want you to feel that I feel this way about you. because we're together for the week and we're all grounded in this Enneagram thing, and so we have something in common, and it's interesting. There's something interesting to talk about. But if I'm just going to a cocktail party and I don't know anybody there, it's a waste of time for me to try to get some to know somebody that I'm not ever going to see again. I don't care. And I don't want to invest the energy in that.
Right. No, it's waste, invest energy, waste energy, not interesting, not get something back.
Yes.
Just something that would even maybe deplete you some or have to go back and replenish yourself.
See, you keep back to that. You keep wanting me to get to that. But, to me it just feels boring. And I feel inadequate, too. I do feel inadequate because I don't know how to, really, I'm not good at small talk. Now, if it's something where we can really get into something, okay, fine.
Right.
I can get something out of that, some information.
Right, you get something out rather than just give something away. I mean, there's a reciprocal action going on.
Yes.
This is an interesting conversation. I'm learning, the other person's giving and learning, and we're getting somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Rather than just a small talk where I'm just giving something out and it's just nothing rewarding about it.
Right. I was actually recently in a situation, and I said something to somebody, and I actually was watching myself, of course, because I was observing, and I was making the note that, hey, that was pretty good. Put that in your, make a note of that, because that was pretty good small talk.
Uh-huh. Now I've got a little more knowledge to work with in the small talk arena. I've got a fly in my fly fishing box for that even.
You got it.
That's great. John, how about you? What will get your goat, so to speak, or set you off or get you into reactivity?
Well, clutter is something I don't care for a lot. Certainly when other people are cluttered. At the same token, I'm very interested in a lot of things, and I attract my own clutter as well. If the clutter's organized, then I feel fine about it. But disorganized clutter to where I can't find the things that are most important to me, whether it's thoughts or ideas or articles of clothing, you name it, just having things to where I'm not able to find things really upsets me. And if someone else is, my spouse is a 7 and she really likes to fill the garage up with things, and I feel like we've had a lot of positive influence with each other, and so I find her letting go of a lot of stuff these days. That's clutter's a really big thing. I do want to hit on the cocktail party, though, that it caused me to smile within that I haven't been in a what I would call a meaningful conversation with somebody that actually said they didn't care to go to cocktail parties. And though we weren't talking, I thought, wow, I don't like to go to cocktail parties. Now, I know I don't like to go to cocktail parties, and I self-confess that to my spouse, and I say, okay, I'm going, but you know it's work for me. All right, this is not, like, for you it's fun, you're going to have a good time. Work.
Yeah, for me it's work. It's all output.
Right.
It's not
so
input.
As long as I accept that I'm going to go work at this, then it's like, okay, I'll go to the cocktail party, and I'll work at small talk, and I'll get better at something I don't really care to do all that much, because frankly, cocktail parties are necessary.
Right.
They're a necessary part of my overall life. Right. I don't like them. You know, if you're talking about something that pushes my buttons, I don't like them. But on the other hand, I like them. Kind of like cleaning the toilet or doing some other things you need to do.
Some things you got to do.
Right.
So you like a clean toilet.
Yeah, right.
So I was just going to make a comment about the clutter. We want to spend a little time. We have limited time. But the clutter can get in the way because it makes claims upon you in a way that you have to spend a little extra time trying to figure out what it is. Is it something like that or to get through the clutter?
Well, it reduces efficiency. I don't see myself as an efficiency expert that's trying to get everything just so. But I see myself as a person who literally channels abundance through my life. And if I'm stopping the flow of that for some dumb reason, like I can't find a piece of paper right. I need to have at a particular point in time, it's very frustrating to me.
Right.
And so I work at keeping the static off of the lines of communication that are flowing through me all the time.
Right. So I want to ask you each, how's the Enneagram as observers, as type 5, how's the Enneagram helped you in your life, helped you in your personal development?
Well, since I first discovered the Enneagram, I noticed several times, and I really haven't been doing this all that long, but I noticed several times where I was just really worried about the time factor and getting things done and saying to myself, well, somehow it's going to work out, and somehow something didn't happen because it didn't have to happen, and it worked out beautifully, and there was plenty of time. And so I just kind of laugh and look up at the sky and say, well, okay, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Letting yourself stay with something, having a little more trust that it would work out okay.
Right.
Right. Good. And Jay?
Well, I think it's a very interesting system, and so I resonated with it just because it's because of that, because I'm analytical. And so this is another tool of analysis. So I just, you know, it fits with me. And when I was an undergraduate, I was a psych biology major. And so I sort of do gravitate toward this sort of thing anyway. And it's been extremely helpful for me in understanding other people, because understanding is huge for me. And so it helps me get at the why of what people do, which is very satisfying to me. It's been extremely helpful for me in my marriage to be able to look at this person, see a panel of people who are like him and go, you know what, he's not just trying to drive me crazy. There's other people out there that do the same thing he does. And so just opening up that whole world of understanding, I think I had come to a pretty good understanding myself by the time I came to the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been additional self-understanding, of course, mm-hmm. but probably more in looking at the rest of the world and seeing the different points of view.
And you also alluded just a little while ago to the tendency to withdraw, being able to self-observe this and counteract it so it's not so automatic.
Yes.
That's a very powerful shift. And one of the things in the Enneagram work that we value as a universal is building the self-observer so I can notice my tendencies and behave appropriate. Sometimes it's appropriate to withdraw, but not just the automatic withdrawal. Allow yourself to stay engaged.
Yes, definitely.
Right. And John, how's the Enneagram helped you in your development?
Well, I believe it was Apollo who said, know thyself, and that may or may not be a correct quotation. Regardless, know thyself has become a very simple little mantra in life that has brought me the greatest foundational aspect of joy, mm-hmm. is to know thyself and to understand more of who I am. And the Enneagram has been very helpful to me in that regard. To know myself has really placed a great requirement on knowing lots of other people.
Yes.
And knowing what is the uniqueness about them as to why can't they just see the things the way they are? I mean, as a five, it's clear to me what's going on. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, that's a limited perspective to the five point of view. And being what I would feel is a pure five, I'm able to accept that that's a flawed philosophy, that I can see the macro view from my limited viewpoint. And so I've been able to embrace also with great interest that, wow, this is exciting. This is adding the square to E equals MC of being able to have a more macro understanding of what's really going on. And that appeals to me as a student and brings out the passion in me.
Right. And it's dependent upon, you know, building that self-observer, that inner witness that allows you to, you know, observe yourself and to open yourself to understanding others.
Right. And I become then much more patient with wasting time, mm-hmm. Listening to somebody in small talk or something else, because then I'm like never wasting time, because I'm always getting an opportunity to gain more insight to those little flies in the tackle box.
Right. Great. Thank you. Well, it's time to turn to our audience and get questions, receive questions. And if you'd say your name.
My name is Terry, and I'm also five. And I once heard a five trying to describe what it was like to be a five say that she felt like the universe was like a 10-inch pipe in regards to sensation, both physical and emotional, and that she was the receptor with a 2-inch pipe, and that... that was why she felt like she had to isolate and withdraw, because there was so much input coming from so much in the world to this very tiny receptacle that she had. And I related to that. And I don't hear much about it. And so I'm wondering, asking other fellow fives if they relate to it or if they can comment on it.
This big world coming at you with all this emotion or power and... your response. Any one of you can grab the mic here.
And we're probably going to have to think about this one for a long time.
I don't know for myself if it's so much too much emotion, but if just in general, if there's too much stimulus, I can find myself just backing off if it's just too much. Very chaotic. I think that's where I heard the clutter thing for myself. The clutter for me feels very chaotic and just disturbing. But too much stimulus, too much activity, too much... I think I would not do very well as a housewife or a day preschool teacher with 5 or 10 kids trying to ask me to do something at the same time. That would be too much at one time.
Yes, and any other response to that? The big pipe coming at you, all the stimulation?
For my part, the big pipe, I don't feel that that I feel the world out there intruding upon me, that it's somehow got an agenda that it's just out to get me or push itself on me. I feel that the world is like the ocean, however, and that it's choppy water and it's huge and it's enormous, and to chart a course across the ocean or to be part of the ocean, unless I prepare for it and have good navigational skills, then I don't want to really be on the water.
Mm-hmm. Do you know this? I think, and Terry, in your question too, and that you're this way that. Neurologically speaking, fives or the observer may be the most sensitive neurological type on the Enneagram, that there's a great sensitivity to things. And that sensitivity is a great asset, but it also can be this liability that you need to go back and figure things out first. But they're very, very sensitive neurologically speaking. Do we have another?
I'd like to respond to that one, if I may. That there's a paradox in that often the fives are seen as the cool, calm, and collected ones, that the pilot of the ship, the one that's turned to in times of crisis to help navigate through choppy waters. And in my own existence, the paradox has been the sensitivity level is so deep, so enormous that in myself, that I know I know in my life, in the universe, it's at a depth far greater than most any persons that I've ever been around in my life. And I've plumbed those depths a great deal myself. It's a paradox, and it's a difficult one to actually live with, that much of the reason for the calm, observant approach is because of just how deep... the terrain that can be, just how deep the issues might be or the challenges or the opportunities or the benefits of going in one direction or another through life might be.
All right. Thank you. That's lovely. From the outside, it can seem one way. From the other inside, it's quite a different view. We have time for one more question.
Hi, my name is Wally. At home, my wife asked me, just as a seven, she's always asked the question, how do you really feel? And I'll just have to stand in it, fine. And 30 minutes later, she's back at me saying, how do you really feel about this? And so I guess my question for the five is, how are you expressing your emotional feelings?
You get
that's the answer right there.
You get
stand by. Yeah,
he just said it.
Stand by.
Stand by.
Hey,
I'll get back to you on that.
You just got mana from heaven. You just got the gift of time. You have to change pace. Great question. Thank you. That'll be.
And so we actually only, in terms of the program, have another minute or two, and I need about half of that to bring a little conclusion, a real short one. Let's respond to that. That's just great. Tell us when to go.
I'll take that. I think that I'm. It's what you hear with a lot of time with fives is they don't know what they're feeling. I don't get that. I'm pretty aware of what I'm feeling, but I don't always. I have to sort of run it through my head and see if it's justified, you know, or do I really want to share that? I probably have the hardest time with the softer emotions or with admitting to being hurt. I can kind of do anger because that was around in my family and I had some pretty good role models for that, so I'm not so uncomfortable with that. But I can get pretty uncomfortable if, you know, with too much, you know, of the softer kind of emotion and definitely with woundedness.
Mm-hmm. Good. And John, do you have a response to that?
I feel that I've needed to sort emotions and get a better understanding of what the different ones are for myself. And as far as sharing them, I feel that I'm relatively happy to share them when they seem legitimate. If they don't seem legitimate, and by legitimate I mean if they're just a jumble of stuff, I'll just share that, you know, I don't know what I'm feeling right now. I'm just kind of all jumbled up. I'm sorry, that's where I'm at. And I'd like to be better than that, but I don't have the combination to tell you what I'm feeling right now. And if that's a limitation, then that's a limitation, but it's my own reality. Rather than somebody poking at me some more, well, don't you know what you're feeling? Poke, poke, poke. Well, I'm starting to feel like you're poking at me, okay? But if you want to know what I'm feeling, I will take that subject under consideration. There is a certain amount of standby, please, that comes with that. At times, if I actually have a sense of what I'm feeling, this is what I'm feeling. I'm pissed off, or I'm happy, or I'm whatever I'm feeling. I don't feel I have an issue sharing what I'm really feeling. It's just a matter of what am I really feeling is my button.
Well, we need to bring the session to a close, and as you all have so willingly and eloquently presented, I mean, you have boundaries. You need to have time to think things over. You are easily impacted, and you want to be careful about, you know, how you express yourself. And there is sensitivity that runs really deeply, and you need time to think things over and to replenish yourself and to analyze and be thoughtful. And sometimes people on the outside see this as that you're too contained or not expressive enough or not into your feelings enough, when inside there can often be a good bit of feeling and a lot of thoughtfulness. So I want to thank all three of you, Nancy and John and Jay, for being with us. And I look forward to our next program, which will be with Type 7, the third of the three mental types. Thank you so much for coming here today and being with us.
Thanks for listening to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram. Join us every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another informative hour of Empower Your Life with the Enneagram. right here on the network truly dedicated to your health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What is this wonderful and effective self-help system known as the Enneagram? The Enneagram tells us why we feel, think, and behave the way we do. And most importantly, it tells us how to become our best self in all domains of life. We introduce to you the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies. Our training program has the highest standards in its field, with remarkable records of trained, skilled teachers. The Trifold School of Enneagram Studies includes the Enneagram Professional Training Program, business training, consulting, classes in the integration of psychology and spiritual life. For more information about our products, training, and classes, go online to www.AuthenticEnneagram.com or call 1-866-366-8973. Empower your life today with the Enneagram.